on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, July 28th, 2025 edition. And we only have a few more trading days in the month of July. And to celebrate our final Monday of July, I have Luke Guerrero back with me. Thanks for being here, Luke.
Thanks for having me.
Now, our goal for this hour is to help you become a better investor, give you perspective and data that help you that can help you take these topics back to your own personal situation and make better decisions with your money. That's what this is all about. And it's not about one good decision. It's about making good, consistent risk versus reward calculations so that you are putting the odds in your favor. No one bats a thousand, no matter who you are. So don't feel bad if you make a mistake. Just pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and move forward and continue with your education. That's what we do as professionals. We have to do that. And that's what you have to do as a novice investor as well. Now, in just a minute, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Justin, Luke, calling in regards to Tech Resources Limited, ticker symbol TECK, down 12% in the last 5 days, 20% year to date. Thoughts on a long-term hold? Thank you.
All right. Looking at Tech Resources, is actually a name we do own for clients, and they did have earnings that were a bit disappointing. There you go. Disappointing. That's the word. And it had a lot to do with one of their largest mines that were they had some trouble with. So, you know, it fell on that news. And the big question is, can it bounce back? I think over time it will. But near term, there's obviously some uncertainty around the future of earnings and that major mine. They did have some positive news about some of their other mines. And Luke, Tech is a diversified miner, not just focusing on copper, which was what that mine focused on. So, you know, do you think this is a reason to jump ship? Obviously, we haven't quite yet.
Yeah, we haven't. Excuse me. We haven't jumped ship. And, you know, I think one thing to consider with any of these miners, right, is they're completely tied to the performance of the underlying commodity. And even though there's been some potential catalysts, right, to copper, obviously this is a diversified miner, about 61% of its business in copper, 39% of its business in zinc. And I think one of the reasons why you have a situation such where poor earnings or disappointments associated with one of their big mines can cause price movements like this is because of the amount of leverage, right? It's got about $6.9 billion of debt on a $16 billion market cap company. The interest coverage ratio is about 1.5. But that works on the flip side as well, right? Leverage also amplifies returns on businesses. And so you benefit in this name by having that diversity, not fully being tuned to copper, getting a different catalyst that can drive this higher. Certainly for us, we're still holding on to this name. We do think it's a good name. But as with any copper industrial metal mining name, more of a medium to long-term hold, as there's not really a big catalyst for industrial demand to pick up in the short term.
Yeah, I mean, long-term, copper has a lot of tailwinds of demand. But from quarter to quarter and month to month, that can certainly ebb and flow. But we think this is a more of a buying opportunity longer term versus something to jump ship on. All right. Thanks for the call. Now, let's pivot over and touch on what we have planned for today. We have about 45 minutes left, and our main focus point is about 7 financial considerations when downsizing for retirement. Retirement planning can be challenging. And most people's biggest asset when entering retirement is their home. And a lot of times a good source of action is to downsize, unlock some of that equity, and utilize that for income, for investments, etc. So we'll look at some of these factors and how to think about the downsizing process. In addition, we want to look at small caps versus large caps. How has the indexing craze impacted the structure of the market? Also, we have an EU deal, it looks like, at least that's what has been announced by the Trump administration. But there is a pledge to buy $250 billion in U.S. energy imports. How realistic is that? We'll take a look at the numbers. And then lastly, we'll take a look at the first half evolution of electricity prices or electricity demand and where the sources are coming from. So look at that data as well. If we have time, we also have questions about natural gas as well as Papa John's pizza, and then questions that came in via the comment section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. But most importantly will be your live call. So don't hesitate to reach out right now at 888-99-CHART with any questions that you have money related. But we're going to head into a break, and your finance and investment questions are welcome right now. No question is too simple or too complex. So you set the agenda for this next hour. So give Invest Talk a call at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
You know what doesn't belong in your epic summer plans? Getting burned by your old wireless bill. While you're planning beach trips, barbecues, and three-day weekends, your wireless bill should be the last thing holding you back. Maybe you should make the switch to Mint Mobile. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for $15 a month. So, while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. I like Mint Mobile, and I think you will too. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/investtalk. That's mintmobile.com/investtalk. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
You've got two for the price of one. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are here, and they're taking your finance and investment questions now. 888-99-CHART.
Luke, let's go take a look at the market today. It was what was expected to be a big day with some headlines around the EU trade deal. But ultimately, the market faded really throughout the day, and we closed about flat. The S&P closed up 1 point. The NASDAQ was up 70 points, but that's about 1/3 of 1%. The Dow ended up in negative territory. What was your takeaway in today's market?
Yeah, well, I mean, there were a couple of bearish things that pushed the market down a little bit. Treasury supply after a pretty weak five-year auction, certainly something the market didn't like. Some extended positioning sentiment, maybe overreaching a little bit. You've seen the run-up in meme stocks over the past couple days, and probably a realization that, okay, maybe we do have some form of a trade deal with the EU. Certainly Japan is already walking back on the details that the president announced last week with the trade deal, supposedly with Japan. But even at this point, right, a 15% tariff on the EU, this pushes our effective tariff rate up to its highest levels in 100 years. And so you have the forms of a deal, but the deal makes the status quo more expensive for consumers, more expensive for businesses. And when things are more expensive for businesses, that means earnings are inherently lower. And what is the price of a company but based upon its expected future earnings? And so I think that you just had a push-pull of trade narrative, of structure within the balance sheet of the government that kind of caused that oscillation throughout the day.
Yeah, definitely, I think a big part of it is maybe the market starting to realize that these trade deals are not real unless they are agreed to by both sides, and especially the case with the EU, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's going to take all the member countries to kind of agree to this. And, you know, that's just historically, that's very difficult for the European Union to agree on anything, much less something as contentious as a trade deal that was thrust upon them and really pushed, obviously, by the current Trump administration. So I think that's part of it as well. And, you know, we're going into a very consequential week overall. And I think there's even more important items on the docket than this tentative EU deal. We have four of the seven Mag 7 names reporting earnings this week. You have Amazon, Apple, Meta, and Microsoft. You also have the Fed meeting coming up on Wednesday. We all know they're not going to change rates, but you know, the market has been really pricing in a couple of Fed rate cuts by year end. And guess what? After Wednesday's meeting, there's only three more meetings between now and the end of the year. And so, you know, that means they really need to get on their horse and start to signal that these rate cuts are truly going to come to fruition. Otherwise, I think the market might move on the lack of clarity around a Fed rate cut. So that's going to be important. You have obviously more economic news near the end of the week. We have the non-farm payrolls on Friday, so we'll get color there. And so there's just a lot more in the next week or two that I think will be market moving events. And you saw the dollar strong today, maybe front running a potential Fed meeting that won't be as dovish as everyone's kind of expecting. You had yields up 1 to 4 basis points across the curve. So maybe pricing in once again, a more hawkish Fed. Gold was down 80 basis points, 0.8%. Bitcoin was up 0.8% and WTI up 2.4%. So that's really where you saw strength in markets today. Was in that energy patch, and let me pull this up here. I'm showing my screen. There we go. If you're watching on YouTube, and what you can see is you had consumer staples. Those struggled on those higher rates, and really the strength was out of the energy patch and some in the tech space, especially the chip names. You know, the names like Qualcomm, AMD, Broadcom, Nvidia. Semis were really the strong part of the market, as well as those energy names. So pretty interesting day in markets as we're overbought and I think set for potential disappointment throughout the week. Now, every day we receive questions from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Here's one that came in earlier. Rich P said, great show. Really nice to see you on YouTube. What is your valuation of United Health? Is it a good buy now for the long-term investments, given the bad news it's facing? What do you think, Luke? United Health down. What are we down from its 52-week high? 70-80%? Are we there yet?
Well, for those of you who don't know, right, United Health was in the news for the murder of the CEO. That was a couple weeks, a couple months ago. Year? I don't even know. Time flies, man. That was some time ago. But that's not why the stock is down, right? The stock is down because they had to replace people who were executives of the company on the backs of an investigation into Medicare fraud, right? And so anytime a health insurance company is investigated for Medicare fraud, there is a threat that they will be cut out of the Medicare Advantage program, which makes up a large portion of UnitedHealth's revenue. That's why it's down 50% over the past year. It's why it's down 44% year to date. Now, they say that they are cooperating with this investigation, but I mean, a potential 5+ year ban from Medicare Advantage would really hurt the bottom line of this company. And so the regulatory risk here is pretty high.
Yeah, that's certainly the case, but also just the bad PR that the murder of the CEO has brought to light is just how much they deny claims. And clearly there's a lot of backlash around that as well. And so it looks like they're starting to approve more claims, which is going to hurt their profitability. You know, this is one of those healthcare names that really focused a lot on the bottom line and streamlining efficiency. And I'm sure in many cases that hurt their customers, their patients. And so they're trying to recalibrate that part of the business as well. So I think there's just a lot of murkiness that it tells me I wouldn't touch this. The technicals, it fell back in April, May timeframe, and it's just been going sideways. This is what we call a bearish consolidation, meaning if any rally is not gaining any traction, it hasn't recovered any major moving averages, it's still in a downtrend, and analysts continue to downgrade earnings expectations for this year and next year. So I see no reason to jump on this train. You're trying to catch a falling knife, and history says that is a bad strategy to employ. Thanks for the question. Now we're moving to a quick break. Still to come, our focus point for today, and more answers to your questions. We encourage you to call right now on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com.
Now, Luke, our main focus point on InvestTalk today is about downsizing for retirement and some underrated financial factors to consider when doing so. Now, I do think we need to preface this conversation with what are the truly most important factors when it comes to where you live in retirement, but frankly, throughout your life. And that is health and social relationships. That's ultimately what will keep you healthy and happy for a long period of time, is putting those factors first. Would you agree with that, Luke?
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. I think it reminds you back when I first started working at my old job at Dimensional, and Ken French, who's a Nobel Prize winning economist, was giving a presentation about consumption and retirement and the glide path of investing. And one thing he pointed out is there are things in life that you can change that will make you happier. One of which is a commute, right? The lower amount of time that you're commuting, that you're spending not doing things that you don't want to do, the happier you're going to be. Same situation here. You don't want to be living 10,000 miles away from everybody that you love. You want to be close to the things that you want to do.
10,000 miles is far.
So it's like around the earth, probably.
Almost, yeah. That's almost on the other side of the earth. Yeah. That's definitely true. So especially when it comes to your primary residence, once again, in retirement or not, it's a utility number one. Okay, it's an utility for your life and your lifestyle and your happiness and your health. So now that we got that, we have that behind us, let's talk about the financial side, though, because that is a factor. It is important. We all have to be able to afford where we live. And it's more than just about the price of the home. It's also the ability to get where you want to go, to live the lifestyle that you want, and know that that is how you are going to live day to day. If you don't If you don't spend any extended time in the area that you're going to live in retirement, then you don't know what it's like to be a resident. And I'm not talking about going there for a few days. I'm talking about, you know, staying for a month or two. And in the era of Airbnb, I think that's a great way to maybe get comfortable with the area that you might live, rent a place for a month, go grab coffee, and act like you live there. So I think that's number one. And get a full picture of your tax rates and maintenance costs, et cetera, which is important as well. Why don't you get into number two, Luke?
Yeah, number two is understanding the estate and inheritance taxes, right? If you are in retirement, that means you are towards the end of your life cycle, if you will, which means something that you do need to consider is how am I going to pass down my assets to my loved ones after I pass? And so the amount that the state is going to take through inheritance taxes, through estate taxes, can vary widely from none to quite a lot. Some states don't have an inheritance tax. Most states, it's going to be at a minimum asset level, usually in the millions of dollars. So a lot of people don't have to consider that. But if you are somebody of means with a lot of assets that you're going to pass along, certainly a big consideration to have.
And the next would be state income tax. Now, nine states have no income tax, but there are actually certain states that don't have income tax on your distributions from a pension, from Social Security, from a 401k or an IRA, retirement assets. So make sure you understand that part as well. And the picture is not always black and white either, because it's not just about that level of tax on the state level. There's county taxes potentially. And then most importantly is what number four here is property tax. And places like Florida and Texas, a lot of people look at that and they say, oh, there's low income tax. And that's certainly no income tax. That's certainly true. And that's great. But it's oftentimes more than made up for by property tax and very high property tax. In fact, I talked to a recent client and he lives in Florida and his girlfriend wants him to move to Arizona. And I said, well, and he said, well, I don't want to pay the state income tax. Well, I said, you know, state income tax in Arizona is only 2.5%, but the property tax there is usually much lower than Florida. And so net-net, you might actually come out with a similar tax burden. Obviously, we had to run the numbers, but, you know, don't automatically rule out Arizona just because there is some tax there. You have to look at the whole tax picture, right?
Yeah, I think that's an important point, right? People often talk about how expensive, how high taxes are in California, when the average tax in California is actually about the middle of the road in terms of income tax in this country, right? It's the top tier, the upper high tier tax rate in California that is so high. And so it's not just about understanding the tax situation broadly, it's about understanding your tax situation. You mentioned the states that don't have tax on Social Security, on retirement distributions, right? That also comes into the other part of people's taxation, which is sales tax. Don't be too distracted by the facts that you can buy things without a sales tax. Understand your full effective tax rate is going to be very important, not just in retirement, but in life in general.
Yeah. So bottom line here is consider the qualitative factors around social cohesion and health that are vital to understanding where you should live from a lifestyle perspective. But then also on the quantitative side, you have to dig deeper than just, oh, the price of the house is X. You really need to understand the tax burden and what the total cost of living will look like in that new area if you do decide to move and downsize. Now, the next MS Talk, we'll look into this topic. Seven things you may not know about reinvesting dividends. It'd be wise to take the time to learn about dividend reinvestments, including tax considerations and how this strategy fits various financial goals and market conditions. That story will be for tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we're ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. Longer days, warmer nights, and you deserve a mattress that keeps up. Avocado Green Mattress uses organic materials that naturally help you sleep cooler, so you can wake up refreshed. It's true. All avocado mattresses are crafted with certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. Breathable materials that are free from harmful chemicals and allow you to sleep cooler. Avocado mattresses are designed to provide exceptional comfort and support. with options ranging from gentle firm to plush, meeting diverse sleep needs and preferences. You can even try before you buy. Visit one of their retail stores or premier retail partners to experience the Avocado Green mattress comfort in person. To make your purchase more accessible, there are easy financing options with Affirm. So, for better sleep, through breathable, naturally temperature-regulating materials, which can improve overall well-being, head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and check out their mattress and bedding sale. Avocado, dream of better.
'25 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's go take a live call. James from New York is looking at Lululemon. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
I'm looking to maybe buy it as a trade. Maybe it's oversold, and I was thinking of maybe getting in just as a trade, not necessarily in a long-term position.
Ooh, as a trade, what are you seeing that tells you this might be a short-term bottom?
I mean, it seems like it's trying to find a bottom, but it seemed like a sell-off that took place earlier. Kind of dramatic. I don't know if there's a lot more bottom to go or if it's a bounce in the near term.
Yeah, see, it already tested the low recently. Let's go back to a daily chart. I'm just looking at the chart here. The low recently back in June was right here around 221, and we tried to get a bounce on Friday. Didn't really recover that level, and then was down again today, about 1.25%. And so, to me, there's nothing about this that screams this is going to turn in the short term. If there was a spike in volume, I might buy that, pun intended, I guess. But I'm not seeing that. It's just the same volume as it's been for the past couple of weeks. And then if I zoom out to a weekly chart, you're really not seeing major support until about 175, and it's at 216 now. So I think there's still more downside there. And then, between 170, 175, that's the area that I think it could get a bounce from, that I could buy, especially if I get in that zone and then you see a spike in volume. That could tell me, okay, there's some short-term capitulation here. There's a reason for this to have a counter-trend bounce at the very minimum. But I'm not seeing anything at these levels after it already bounced, right? And it was a weak bounce. Once again, it got down to around the 220 level back on, was it June 23rd? It bounced up to around 250, and it's just been in a steady downtrend since. And so it failed at the 20-day moving average. It's below all the major moving averages. I see zero reason to be buying this for a trade right at the moment. Thanks for the call.
That makes sense. Thank you.
No problem. Yeah, look for that 170, 175 range to potentially play a counter trend bounce. Let's keep things moving and drop in another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin. I'm calling today about liquefied natural gas and how to invest in this. I'm curious if you guys invest in it and if you look specifically into domestic companies versus international companies. I own a few. I do own Canadian Natural Resources, CNQ, as well as Williams Company, WMB. But I was just curious, if something like TGS, which is a Argentinian liquefied natural gas company, does it matter if it's international? Do you think this company is a good way to invest in LNG and kind of diversify my exposure in case of tariffs or prices or whatnot? If you can let me know just a little bit of information on LNG, that would be great. We appreciate it. Appreciate the show. Thank you, man.
All right, looking at an LNG name, a foreign LNG name out of Argentina. TGS is the symbol. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the name. But they do operate within this space. And it looks like they have a good balance sheet, certainly some good earnings growth last year. It went from 42 cents in earnings in 2023 to $2.38 last year. But earnings are supposed to fall 12% this year, back up 5% next year. No dividend yields. Luke, what do you make of this name and this idea?
I'm seeing strong cash flow, seeing improving profitability. Relative strength is still okay, right? It's down 4.95% year to date, but the rest of the industry is down down even more than that, right? It's outperforming its industry by about 22.8% this year. It is the largest, I believe, of the natural gas transporters. They have about 9,000 kilometers of pipeline. They transport about 60% of Argentina's natural gas. And so it is a critical company in a critical industry in a country that has for, I don't know, decades struggled economically, yeah. Right? And so you would anticipate that even though there's a lot of public sector cuts and a lot of funding cuts and money being cut from budgets in Argentina, that a critical industry and company like this would be spared and would in fact still have a lot of strong government support. It's had decent earnings, I would say, in the past couple quarters. It looks good. They've been expanding. I just kind of worry about the fragile nature of the Argentinian economy.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, you know, maybe you can give a little bit more take while I take a look at this.
I think
where their revenue's coming from.
Yeah. Like anything in South America, you have elevated political risk.
Yeah.
And so that's why this does look pretty cheap. I like diversity. I like getting that foreign exposure, especially in South America, where I do think the political risk is a bit overblown. And I think there's good risk versus reward. Not to say that there's not risk. It's just the valuations you're getting are super attractive in a lot of these South American names, especially compared to our domestic companies where there's so much money and capital has flown into. And so I like the idea of, natural gas is needed throughout the world. It's kind of become the swing molecule. It's even more important now than oil in many respects. And so the fact that, places like Japan, even China, lots of Europe is really dependent on natural gas, especially with Russia being cut off from exporting a lot of their natural gas, especially to Europe. So I like this name. I like the diversity. I like the valuation and profitability. And the technicals look pretty fine. So
What if I told you that 76% of its revenue is from selling inside the country? That's what I'm concerned with.
Okay. So you're domestic. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not really getting a lot of exports. That's kind of the thing that I was concerned about with a company such as this is now you're relying on the health of the Argentinian economy in isolation because so much of your revenue is coming from the domestic source. Only 6% from the U.S., 4% from China, everywhere else below 1%.
Well, whatever you think of Milei, the Argentinian stock market has certainly improved dramatically since he was elected. And so, this is kind of a play on that, is that continuation of recovering of the Argentinian economy. And, historically, Argentina was one of the great economies of South America. So, I think it still has a lot of potential in that sense. So I'm going to give this one a thumbs up in my book. Thanks for the call. Let's touch a bit on small caps versus large caps, Luke. And, we're in the era of indexing. And historically, small caps had outperformed. It makes sense. If you go talk to one of your, what would you call it, Eugene Fama? Would that be
a board member?
A board member.
Yeah, member of the board.
Okay. So he's somebody that you studied and respected throughout the years, and he had what is called the size premium, meaning the smaller the company, over time, you should get better returns. But since 2008, it's kind of been the opposite, right? The bigger the company, the smaller, the bigger the returns, and vice versa. Do you think this is just simply a product of indexing? And B, do you think there's a time where it might return to small caps suddenly outperforming as they should based on economic principles?
I think you have a problem statistically sometimes when you try and go for narrower time periods versus wider samples.
True.
And things that can become really noisy, right? And so how much of the underperformance of small caps relative to mega caps is a result of structural things like flows, right? When people contribute to their 401ks every month or IRAs, what have you, that money is oftentimes just set it and forget it. It's flown into the S&P, the Qs. And yes, it does drag those stocks upward because of it, because there's a lot of demand there. So how much of it is associated with that? And how much of it is associated with an era of zero interest rate unicorn tech stocks that were bid up the wazoo with no profits? Tough to say. That's why you shouldn't really take, in my opinion, you know, small sample sizes in 17, 18 years is a pretty small window compared to the history of markets. And so, you know, if you see this over wider time frames, 20, 30 years, maybe I start to buy that there's evidence of it, but still this seems a little bit too narrow for me to think that the reasons why small caps tend to outperform over time are no longer the case.
Well, I think it's just simply a market structure thing. As you said, so much 401k money and just passive money is flowing into these indexes that are market cap weighted, and active managers tend to invest in smaller names. There tends to be better valuations because there's that size premium. But the size premium now has become so large that those smaller cap names are just better values. And so as money flows from those active names into the passive indices, more money just tends to flow towards those larger names. And I think there's a market distortion that's happening here, that the big question is, when will that reverse? I think it reverses when you go through some sort of reversal of these forced trends, meaning layoffs, really, right? Is when, and also you could also have the boomer generation, who they have a lot of money in these targeted funds as well, as they retire and they want to get more conservative, or they just naturally sell off those positions to fund their retirement. I think those could be factors as well. So there, you know, the big question is, I think, when will this reverse? Because economic gravity is economic gravity. You can't have these market distortions go on forever. And so, you know, I think 17 years is a decent amount of time, but I don't equate it to, oh, small cap investing is suddenly worse. It's just a matter of flows. Flows change, move prices more than anything, more than sentiment over the long term, right? It's where is money flowing to? We talked about how so much money has flown into domestic equities from foreign markets. Now that's starting to reverse, and that has shifted the dynamics. And so I think it's just underrating how important flows are to market dynamics.
Yeah, I got to agree to disagree here. You know, you have measurement bias, and 17 years is not a long time frame for any type of, you just don't get enough sample there. And yeah. So you have especially because you have such a unique Fed driven era that overwhelmingly supported large cap growth, mega cap tech names, that it's just, there's so much noise in there. You can't even really have an isolated understanding of what's going on. There were periods in the past, right, where interest rates were low, where inflation was starting to tick up again. What happened? Small caps underperformed. And so because so much of this time period was from 2009 to 2021, which was a historically weird time to be capitalizing a company, I just think you gotta say, yes, maybe there are some issues with fund flows, but I wouldn't chalk it up to, you know, 401ks being the primary driver here and discount the amount of power the Federal Reserve has had going back all the way to the financial crisis.
Yeah, I certainly there's an argument there. I still think the flows are underrated, and I do think that we'll look back in history at some point over the next probably couple decades and say constructing indexes based on market cap is deeply flawed and creates distortions, not just in markets, but also in society, right? Just think of how wealthy the founders of the Mag 7 companies are.
How would you create a benchmark then?
Equate.
Why? But then you would fundamentally overweight tiny names that have zero pricing power, zero revenue, zero profitability.
But the index providers, they pick pick the names. I'm not saying you have to buy every name in the market.
Not all of them do. The S&P does by committee, but most index providers do name count approach, right? It's pretty, the S&P is inherently murky and they just have a bunch of people deciding. Everybody else, the reason why they do it market cap weighted like Russell, FTSE, MSCI, is because they take the whole investable universe and they say, okay, well, if this company has 20% of the revenue of the global market, it should probably not be the same size as a company that has 0.00001% of the revenue.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think there's a better way to do it. We'll see how I think that evolves. But that's just my take. But interesting topic, and we'll see how small cap investing evolves over time. Now, let's play another Invest Talk caller question now at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Invest Talk. I was hoping you guys could take a look at Papa John's Pizza. Ticker is PZZA. I love pizza. I feel like a lot of people do. And from what I could see, it looked like the company, you know, makes good money, pays about a 4% dividend, and looks like they have done a good job, you know, being able to afford that dividend. And then it looks like it's near some long-term support. So I was looking at it as a, you know, a potential, if you want to call it a turnaround or just a cyclical play on something that I enjoy. I'll listen on the show. Thanks. Bye.
Well, who doesn't love pizza?
Made me laugh so much. I love pizza too. He's right.
I guess maybe some people don't like pizza, but most people do. And if you love pizza, well, this is at least the ticker symbol for you, PZZA. And it's Papa John's. Luke, what's your favorite pizza place?
The pizza that I make. No, of the
chains.
Yeah. The chains. I don't know, man. I really think Domino's got a lot better after they changed their crust and did all those things. And you can track it on the website. I think it's good pizza. Papa John's, I think, is number two for me, though.
Okay. Yeah. I used to like Papa John's back when I ate. If I buy pizza, I go from a local, support the local businesses type of thing. And I think there's better pizza from locally. So I don't tend to buy from the big chains, but you know, Papa John's is a pretty good one. We're going to head to a break though.
Costco pizza.
definitely that's bang for the buck. Oh, that's for sure. Especially when you're looking at calories.
Oh yeah.
But we're going to go to a quick break. But after the break, we'll answer this question about Papa John's Pizza. If you have any questions that you want to add to this, give us a call now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, Luke and I were bantering about what our favorite pizza chain was. You're saying Domino's. I'm going to still stick with Papa John's. And that's what we're talking about here. Caller asked about. And they had some controversy some years back. The original Papa left, and Shaq is now, I think, a major spokesperson, and everybody loves Shaq, right?
Again, except for big men from the early 2000s.
Yes, that's very true. But when it comes to their business is not done too hot lately. They're in $3.51 during the pandemic when nobody could go out to eat, and people still needed to eat, and they ordered a lot of pizza. But since then, earnings have come back down to earth. Supposed to be $1.69 this year, down 28%, but then bounce back next year. I think that's my biggest worry, is that the recent trend. But is that all priced in? Because this has been in a long downtrend since 2021, when it peaked out around $140 per share. Now we're down to $43 per share. And if I look technically, it had a nice reversal back in May on the charts. And I'm starting to like the look of the longer-term chart for potential reversal. But what are you seeing on the fundamental side?
Yeah, on the fundamental side, I mean, cash flow is kind of falling. Profitability has been flat for years coming out of the pandemic. They don't have much debt, and they don't really issue shares. They have 11.96% short interest out there, maybe on the back of this run-up that we've seen over the past 3 months. A lot of people think that that's too much for this pizza company. But one of the reasons why I think they've done well in this turnaround, right, is they have simplified a lot of operations. I think they came up with a loyalty program. But most importantly, they took a page out of the Domino's toolbook, instruction manual, whatever you want to say, And Domino's was really successful from an equity perspective because it became a tech company that sold pizza, right? The pizza order routing, the pizza tracker. Everybody loves a good pizza tracker. And so Papa John's kind of started to do the same thing, leveraging technology to do the most difficult thing it is for a business to do, which is find the customers where they are. And so you have seen some growth internationally, you know, same store sales up 2% year over year, revenue growth in general up about 1%. Is it enough to change my entire sentiment on a company that's been struggling for a really long time? Probably not, but it is looking pretty cheap right now relative to where it has been. You know, the average forward-looking price to earnings 27, trading about 21 times, trading about 0.7 sales at the moment. But, you know, I'm not really seeing a big catalyst for it to really take off back to where it has been, you know, before all these controversies and really before the pandemic.
Yeah, that price to sales ratio around 0.7, that's near the lows that's ever been. So I like that. And their return on invested capital is 24%, which is still a very strong number. You know, selling pizzas is typically a very profitable business. Their dividend yield of 4%, it probably isn't going anywhere. It's staying at that level. I don't see a lot of growth. It's kind of pushing up the higher end of what it should pay out. The payout ratio is 77%. So I like it at this point. I think there's a good risk versus reward after this recent reversal. All right, lastly, Luke, let's talk about the EU deal. And the report is that the EU is going to buy $250 billion worth of energy from the United States per year over the next 3 years. Do you think that's possible?
I think that there's the problem isn't that it's whether or not it's possible. The problem is whether or not the people that negotiated, i.e. The people of the European Union, really have the authority to make those kinds of promises. Right. We talked about it at the top of the show. You have to get the member states to agree, and the member states are the ones doing the purchasing. It's not like the European Union is this continental body that is buying energy for the member states themselves. Right. And so there's a lot of hurdles here to actually getting something like this done. But as with any administration, oftentimes you really want the headline. Going back to the Japan trade deal about all the investment, only really going to be about 1% of that $550 billion. So the question is, does the headline stick and the reality not really meet the road? And does anybody care? Do markets just keep pumping?
But even if they try, the EU imported about $236 billion of crude last year, about $40 billion in LNG, $50 billion in LNG. And then you had coal as well, metallurgical coal. Mm. And so the end result here, though, is that U.S. exports are barely that much. So we would have to ramp up our production, which we may or may not have as much. And just the numbers don't really line up to where, and even if it happened, it would majorly disrupt the energy markets worldwide. And so it's pretty clear that this is a headline number that won't come to fruition. You know, maybe we get part of it, which would be obviously helpful. But like you said, to line up all these countries to agree to it, I think is it's a very tough task. And I think that's one of the reasons why the markets didn't really react too much on this news once the market opened. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, your investments, your strategy, your taxes, your retirement planning, maybe your downsizing of your home, whatever it is, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button, and schedule a no-cost portfolio review with myself or Luke. And we thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about a free podcast download, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.